Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 16th day of February 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Rich Feltus. He's VP of Research at R.J. O'Brien and at their Miami IB convention today. He'll join us for just a few moments to take up the commodity markets and talk some about what's been happening with the Chinese delegation in the United States. We'll hear about that in the news as well. And then a bit later in the program, we'll look at the agricultural weather forecast. Pete Levitt will be here. Matt Bennett should take up the cash grain market with us. And along the way, we'll talk about Illinois township government. It's the most often used government in the state. In fact, it's the most often used local government in the nation. Has its time come and gone? We'll hear more during today's edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day mostly higher. The nearby March soft red winter wheat at 6.28 and 3 quarters, up 2 and 3 quarters today. May at 6.35 and a quarter, a penny and a quarter higher. And July at 6.48, up 1 and 1 quarter. The hard red in Kansas City finished $7 even, 14 and a quarter cents higher. March corn futures, 6.36 and a quarter, 9 and a quarter higher. May contract, 6.39 and 3 quarters, up 8 and 3 quarters. And July at 6.42 and 3 quarters, 8 and 3 quarters higher. December contracted $5.68 in the corn pit, up 8 and a quarter in the March of next year at 5.79 and a half, up 9.5 cents. March soybean futures down 2.75 cents to settle at $12.58 and a quarter. May at 12.65, 3.75 lower. July 12.70, 3.5 down 4. August beans 12.69 and 3 quarters down 4.25. And November's at 12.55 and a quarter, 5.25 lower. The soybean meal finished at 3.30.80 in the nearby March, down $2 on the afternoon. Bean oil at 53.05, 30 cents lower. Live cattle futures finished the nearby April at 129.65, up 75. June at 127.60, 22.5 cents higher. The March feeders at 156.80, 2.5 up 20. April at 159, 32.5 up 82.5. And the May at 160.60, 2.5 up 67.5 cents. And the lean hogs in the April contract at $90.22.5, up $1.32.5. The May at 98.45, 55 cents higher. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like and this hour. Nearby crude oil at $102.37 a barrel, up 57 cents. Ethanol at 220 and 2 tenths, that's 6 tenths of a cent higher. Natural gas at 256 and 7 tenths, up 14 and 2 tenths of a cent. And heating oil for the day, diesel fuel, 2 and 2 tenths of a cent higher, at $3.21 and 4 tenths of a cent. Gold contracts finished the February at $1,726.80 an ounce, down, or rather up 50 cents, and the dollar at 79.35, that's down 0.31. The CRB index at 316.41, up 1.46 on the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service. For the Urbana-Champaign area yet this evening, mostly clear, a low of 28 degrees with a west wind at 5 to 9 miles an hour. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny skies in the area, a high of 47 degrees, a southwest wind at 5 to 9. Friday night, partly cloudy, a low of 30 degrees with a south wind at 7 miles an hour. That'll then turn to the west-northwest. And Saturday, partly sunny, a high of 42 degrees with a north-northwest wind between 6 and 15, gusting to 20. Saturday night, cloudy, and a low of 25 degrees. Sunday, it'll be sunny with a 39-degree high. Sunday night, mostly clear and 25 on Washington's birthday. Monday, mostly sunny, a high near 43. And Monday night, mostly cloudy and 32 degrees. By the time we get to Tuesday, chance of rain in the forecast, mostly cloudy, a high of 47 degrees. Tuesday night, a chance of rain, mostly cloudy and low of 34. And on Wednesday, a chance of rain, partly sunny, afterwards with a high of 50 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get closer to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist.
Support for Stock and Commodity Reports on Illinois Public Media comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, now hosting risk management seminars. A complete list of seminars is at sfarmmarketing.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker at ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois, is traveling today in his stead. Rich Feltus, VP of Research at R.J. O'Brien, joins us from Miami, Florida. Good afternoon to you. Thanks so much for taking the time with us, Rich.
Hey. Hi, Todd. Good to be with you.
Well, you're there, I think, with IB, which is Introducing Broker, convention for R.J. O'Brien. Is that correct?
Yes, we're down here once a year. We bring all our top IBs in for a exchange of ideas conference. This one actually happens to be a three-day cruise down to the Bahamas, so it's pretty good duty.
Oh, yeah, you can't beat that. That's not so bad. That'll be a good deal. I suppose you. When do you take off? Tomorrow?
Actually, boarding the vessel tomorrow, and we've got the meetings Saturday morning, Sunday morning. We've lightened up on the speakers. This is more of a relationship-building exercise, but nonetheless, got some top-name folks in here, and we hope we're going to convey some insights and trading opportunities for the attendees.
Now, one of those that will be speaking to them, of course, will be you. What are you going to tell them about the marketplace?
Well, we're going to talk about the funds. We're going to talk about the crude oil market. We're going to talk about the outlook here coming up for the season ahead, and so much depends on the weather. But starting with the weather, our consultants, Commodity Weather Group, actually looking for more of a return to normalcy in terms of temperatures in the year coming up. And so we're going to be outlining that. I think a big issue in the markets this year is also going to be acreage. We had over 10 million prevent plant acres last year. The three-year average is only about 2.5. And if we bring back more acres online, Canada is another country. My goodness, the last couple of years, 5 million acres they have not been able to plant that are waiting to come online. If Commodity Weather Group is right about a early spring, of course, we're likely to have warmer than normal temperatures because it's basically been a very mild winter and is likely to continue so through March, according to our weather support folks. That suggests early planting, a lot more acres, and then you're setting the table if we don't run into heat this summer, into at least a trend or higher corn yields for 2012-13, and that likely suggests lower prices for December corn. Usually the corn market breaks in June. Todd, I think if we have early planning this year, we could be breaking the back of this corn market as early as mid-May.
And how far back do you think it might break?
Well, that's where we get into the crude outlook, and we're going to be talking about the crude oil market just a little bit. And first of all, showing some graphics and just how closely the corn price and the crude price correlate over the last years. And certainly there's not a lot of evidence of the corn market breaking much below $5 as long as crude oil is above $80 or higher. And while I think the situation is actually less frothy in the Middle East today than a year ago, we've got Libya back online, and even though there's a lot of headlines about Egypt and Syria, either one of those is very large crude producers. Iran is, of course, the second largest OPEC producer, but my goodness, they need the cash. All this saber-rattling, I think, about the Straits of Hormuz is just that, saber-rattling. So if one develops a range in crude somewhere between $85 and $110, which is where we think it's going to stay, even with a large corn crop, I don't think the December corn contract, which tonight closes at 6.25, I don't think it's going to be able to spend much time below $5. But nonetheless, these are still attractive levels right here vis-a-vis what they could be from the middle of the summer onward if we add 40, 45 million tons to U.S. corn production this year.
Attractive enough for you to finish off old crop sales and make new crop sales as well?
You know, I would be patient on the old crop sales. Mm-hmm. Whatever this old crop carryover is, 750, 700, I even seen sub 700 numbers, I think we're going to yet have a basis play, a spread play, even a board play to try to draw this farmer corn out of his hands. And, of course, they own the majority of old crop stocks right now. One caution flag that I would point out, we're going to be talking about the last four stocks reports, which in total, when you net them all out, Todd, they've had 650 million bushels more corn than the analysts had expected on these reports. And I think there's a real risk for the upcoming stocks report at the end of March to have another more corn stocks than the trade expected. So these are just becoming very high-risk events, and I think be it conservative traders or index managers, managed fund ag traders, all are going to be approaching this next stocks report with a lot of caution, pulling back on positions, and we could see some. We really could see some weakness going into the month-end report next month.
You know, the stocks report would show on hand bigger because producers are not selling, or for what reason?
Well, I think, you know, we look at the degree to which the trade has done a bad job estimating these stocks. I honestly think some of the fault lies on the analysts. Shoulders of the analysts like myself. I think we have not done a very good job estimating the impact of DDGs on potentially underestimating the efficiency of how many gallons of ethanol we're pulling out of a bushel of corn. And then with, you know, with the recession in 08 forward, just the increased cost pressures on livestock producers and how they've gained more efficiency. They've been forced to in their feeding operations. And certainly, let's face it, Todd, with this extraordinarily warm winter that we've had, augurs for less likely feeding in the December-February period, which is ending in a couple of weeks, than in most years. So I think collectively there's a danger that we once again come up with more corn stocks, again, on this March 31 report that the trade expects.
Turn your attention to the soybean market. We have, of course, a crop coming on in South America, and we have a Chinese delegation in the United States who's, in the last couple of days, made some purchases or promises for purchases.
Indeed. It's always an interesting time to see those folks come over here, and this one graced by the next man in line for the leadership. It was interesting to note the governor of Iowa saying this was the most important foreign overseas visitor in the state of Iowa since either the Pope in 1979 or Khrushchev in 1959, all underscoring, you know, the importance of China as a agricultural customer, $20 billion in agricultural purchases out of the U.S. last year. The MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding, they inked about 12 million bushels of soybeans, 12 million tons, I should say, and that's a half a million tons more than last year. Part of the trip is just to showcase the importance that China has to our agricultural trade. But the broader issue, your first question about soybeans, I think there is certainly a further upside potential there. China in the year ahead, in the current year, in the marketing year, will only take a little over 20 million tons of U.S. soybeans in the year ahead. That could be upwards of 25 million tons because of the shortfall going on in Argentina. But that, Todd, is a story still unfolding depending upon how the March, April rains go in Argentina, whether or not that crop's going to be, you know, 45 million tons or less or 50 million tons or more. I'm going to be reminding our audience just a few short years ago, we added actually between the January and the final crop report, we added 6 million tons to the Argentine soybean crop on good late season weather. So that's a story still being written, but right now the way it looks, South America's down on soybean production. We're not going to get the needed acreage here to up our crop in light of the higher export demand, 300, 400 million bushels more pull on our exports this year than a year ago. And all of that is suggested that this November soybean contract is going to be very, very well supported, if not work higher, until we know how the crop unfolds.
Rich, thanks so much for taking so much time with us, and enjoy your trip into the Gulf of Mexico.
Okay, will do. Thanks a lot, Todd.
All right, that is Rich Feltus, and he joins us from Miami, the VP of Research for R.J. O'Brien. You can always hear it again if you'd like on our website. The address is WILLAG.org. Even on your smartphone at m.willag.org. No www in front of that one. And for today, you can just call 217-333-3434 and hear a part of it just on a regular phone line. We'll have it all posted by about 3:15 this afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In today's agricultural news, Chinese leaders have made commitments to purchase $4.3 billion worth of U.S. soybeans. That during signing ceremonies that took place at the World Food Prize Center in Des Moines, Iowa yesterday. Soybean Association CEO Kirk Leeds from Iowa says the commitments signed totaled more than 317 million bushels, with more bean commitments expected in the next few days.
They purchased about 8.6 million metric tons. Again, these are intentions to purchase. They're not really binding contracts. About $4 billion in U.S. dollars. They're also going to be signing some additional contracts in Los Angeles as part of a bigger buyers conference that they're having with Vice President Xi. We do not know the exact numbers, but we anticipate that when they finish signing a few more soybean contracts in L.A., we'll be over 12 million metric tons in these signing ceremonies, which will be the largest that they've ever done any of these tours.
The Chinese delegation indicated its intentions to purchase U.S. soybeans by signing 15 contracts with U.S. companies, including Bunge, Cargill, CHS, and AGP. Lead says China has been a great trading partner and a key customer for U.S. soybeans, and that this agreement shows a commitment on both sides to continuing that relationship. Well, let's switch from beans to corn now. The National Corn Growers Association, in conjunction with the Illinois Corn Growers and the Minnesota Corn Growers, has filed comments with the Environmental Protection Agency and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, outlining several concerns with the proposed Corporate Average Fuel Economy Standards, or CAFE standards. The group believes the proposed CAFE GHG, that stands for Greenhouse Gas Rule, is inconsistent with the RFS2 regulation and the EISA requirement to use 36 billion gallons of renewable fuels by 2022. Specifically, the comments recommend modifying three areas. First, as currently written, the group says the rule would favor electric vehicle technology over renewable fuels. Next, the rule would be rewritten to integrate the revised renewable fuel standards promulgated by EPA. And finally, that the proposed rule should be amended to provide incentives for the production of flex fuel vehicles that are needed to consume the targeted amounts of renewable fuels outlined in the RFS2. Oh, let's keep hopping commodities, this time to the beef industry, which has spoken out about the increase in grazing fees, according to the Public Lands Council and the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. President Obama's proposed budget includes an effective increase in the public lands grazing fee assessment, which would force family-owned ranches to shell out more cash to Uncle Sam. Dustin Van Loo, PLC Executive Director and NCBA Director of Federal Lands, called the proposal unwarranted. According to Van Loo, these ranchers already willingly invest significant amounts of money to manage and improve the range. One more commodity to work with. This is the dairy industry. The Justice Department has announced that the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania has awarded summary judgment to the government on a finding that Daniel Allgaier, doing business as Rainbow Acres Farms and Rainbow Valley Farms, violated the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act and the Public Health Services Act. An investigation conducted by the Food and Drug Administration showed that Allgaier was packaging unpasteurized milk in unlabeled containers and then distributing the milk for human consumption in interstate commerce. Once warned, Allgaier attempted to evade federal regulators by creating a private membership organization that he used to enter into cow-sharing agreements with his customers. The court found that cow-sharing agreements were, well, merely a subterfuge and issued an order enjoining Mr. Allgaier and his associates for distributing unlabeled or unpasteurized milk for human consumption across state lines. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Oh, governmental boundaries, they'll get you every time. Speaking of which, Illinois is notorious for having the most units of local government in the country. Township boards make up a big chunk of those, and local officials are debating whether or not the time for townships has come and gone. Rachel Otwell reports.
Brian Smith is the director of the Township Officials of Illinois. He says township government is good for the state's economy, saying they operate in the black and make every penny count. And he says the services townships provide are much appreciated by the people who live in them.
We haven't had a bad winter this year, but in the years that we have, you know, the people are very grateful for their highway commissioners who are out there working, you know, night and day to make sure the roads are kept open so that the school buses can get out and get the kids to school, the postman can deliver the mail, and that people can get out to work.
Not every county in the state is structured the same, but the vast majority have townships. There are more than 1,400 boards. The need for them has long been a contentious issue. Townships take on a variety of duties. They can deal with roads, police, and fire protection, even operate financial assistance programs for the poor. But other levels of government can offer those services, too. That's where the arguments begin. Senator Terry Link, a Lake County Democrat, says there are too many units of government in the state. Last year, he tried to form a panel to consider which taxing body should stay and which should go. It failed to win approval.
Mine was an overall package, and I think that we have to look at everything as an overall package and not just target, you know, okay, we're going to go after school districts, or we're going to go after townships, or we're going to go after whatever. If we're going to go after it, let's go after all units of government.
But state lawmakers often begin their political careers in local government, and they tend to be protective of the status quo. Attempts at consolidation, whether it involves school districts or other boards, can also be unpopular with local residents. There are growing calls to change the process by which voters can decide if they want to keep townships. They have the ability now, but they must meet a high standard to dissolve a township board. All townships in a county have to vote for it, and even getting it on the ballot can be a hurdle. That's why there is a growing call to make it easier for the public to vote for change. It's a proposal that Senate President John Cullerton introduced last year. Emily Miller with the Better Government Association says the issue is likely to surface again in the coming months.
We want to make sure that folks that live in townships are getting the most bang for their buck. Some townships may need to take a look at themselves and consider whether or not they are being good stewards of the public resources.
The watchdog group studied townships and found them to be redundant and often sitting on large sums of cash. The group says the millions in taxes going toward road maintenance is a waste, and it would be a better use of taxpayer money to have those duties absorbed by nearby counties or municipalities.
Township government is a thing that used to be really useful, and particularly downstate areas where township government is really connected to the people that live there, it may still make sense. But in more urban areas where townships no longer play a role, it may be time to start thinking about whether or not people should have the power to dissolve their township if they want to.
You would expect a township supervisor to disagree with those who suggest kicking him out of that job. But Sam Yingling is a bit of a renegade among his colleagues. He's from Avon Township in Lake County. Yingling says serious changes need to be considered, and in some cases, it may make sense to do away with certain townships altogether. He says one reason there is heated debate about townships is they allow room for government corruption. He says the power structure is convoluted and there may be too few checks and balances.
You have a very loose power structure, which has consistently created problems and really opened the door for fraud and abuse.
Evanston, north of Chicago, is one of the oldest townships in the state, but it's also a municipality. Critics say the township's expenses are a blatant waste of tax money. Aldermen there are looking for ways to have it eliminated. Abuse of power and redundancy aside, asking a voter to change who maintains their roads or provides some of the other services they rely on can be a tough sell. With a history that dates back before the Civil War, townships have time, and for now, the election law, on their side. I'm Rachel Otwell.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from AM 580 and Illinois Public Media. On the phone line with us for this Thursday afternoon to take up the cash grain market is Matt Bennett. He's at Windsor Grain and TGM. Thanks so much, Matt, for taking the time with us, please.
Yep. No problem.
Well, let's talk about first. You were at a meeting there in Casey, an Ag Outlook that WILL has sponsored. What did you hear that was of interest, and how'd the meeting go?
Well, it was a pretty interesting meeting. A lot of guys were there. One of the more interesting things was just how many guys had made more than a quarter of their expected production for sales for corn and beans in 2012. And, I would say less than 10% of the room had their hands up. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Interesting on the idea that you think more should have be 25% sold?
Yeah. In my opinion, I think guys need to be looking at the profitability of making sales in this area. And I know every farm is different, but most of the guys we work with that I do risk management for are profitable at these levels. So I'm not saying bank the whole farm, but I certainly think there should be some protection put in place before we get too close to planting time.
Are you more concerned about the price of corn or price of soybeans for new crop?
I would say, to be perfectly honest with you, I'd probably be more concerned with corn. Just simply, there's more acres that we kind of manage on with corn acres. A lot of guys are, more than 50% corn, have been for quite some time. So I guess whenever I look at things, I'm not as worried about beans currently, but I do think both corn and beans would have some downside if we have a good spring. So, we're focusing most heavily on corn right now.
Well, thanks for participating down at Casey today and for being on the radio with us this afternoon.
No problem, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He's with TGM. I'm based out of Windsor, Illinois. This, of course, is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Thursday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us to take up the weather forecast is Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist. Hi, Pete.
Yes. Hi, Todd.
Well, tell me about the weather forecast here first. We had a little rain, not much, but a bit of rain, and it's still cloudy outside.
Yeah. Well, the front has gone through, and we're getting clearing weather and relatively mild temperatures coming along. And we'll have a fair and rather mild day tomorrow. Another little cold front comes through on Friday from northwest to southeast. Not much really cold air behind it. It may produce a few sprinkles, mostly up north, but it doesn't look very impressive. And temperatures actually, even behind the front, will still average a little bit above the normals, which the normals, by the way, range from about 41 is a normal high, and about 23 or 4 is a normal min. Gives you some idea. And then as we move into the weekend through the week into next week, we see some increasing moisture but continued mild temperatures. Temperatures for the week should average about 6 or 8 degrees above normal, coolest in the beginning, warmest at the end. And there's some indications of some increasing precipitation as we move through next week. Right now, I'm not buying that. It looks like a continued dry pattern and maybe some very light showers at best.
Now, speaking of things that you may or may not be buying, there are some thoughts that this will be an early spring. Is that the way you're thinking about the market?
The third Thursday, Todd. And so we do have the extended forecast sitting out there. And what we are looking at is a mild pattern. As a matter of fact, if you take their extended forecast right through the next 12 months, if you can imagine that, they've got temperatures averaging mostly above normal. Where there are any departures from normal, they're all on the above side, mostly the southern two-thirds of the country through the spring and summer with about normal temperatures in the Midwest. And then it moves to more of a southwest to northeast pattern of above normal as we move into the fall months. So there is just not a blue line, a below normal line anywhere on any of their extended forecasts for North America during the next 12 months. So that should give you some idea of where their influence from their charts lie. As far as precipitation concerns, though, that's not all bad. Normal temperatures in the Midwest, and we do have above normal precipitation forecast for this coming month, for March, right through most of the Midwest, and that should keep moisture pretty high. And then that sort of peters out as we move into spring. Still the above-normal precipitation, mostly eastern Corn Belt, equal chances the rest of the Midwest and the upper Midwest. I'm still suspicious that upper Midwest is a dry spot, though, in our extended outlook.
All right. Anything else to add before I let you go?
Well, just very quickly, while we're having a very warm February here across the U.S., we're about the only major country in the Northern Hemisphere that's experiencing warm weather. We in Southern Canada, we have most of Asia, Europe, South Asia, all below normal to much below normal. And I think when the data is all in, the month of February will come in as one of the first significantly below normal months globally that we've had in quite a number of years. So that's just an outlook on what the current month is going to look like, and it may be a surprise to some of the people living here who think it's been a warm season. It has here. It hasn't anywhere else.
Pete, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. Thanks for listening. You can always find us again at willag.org.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.